Contractors doing any government work overseas face a big new rule that goes into effect this coming Monday. It's aimed at preventing contractors from engaging in human trafficking. It's a rule with teeth, and it covers a lot of ground. Joining me with more on the rule and its implications, Peter Ayer, a partner at the Government Contracts Group at the law firm Crowell and Mooring. Peter, good morning. Thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Tom. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. So first of all, what is the activity? What is human trafficking? What activity is this rule aimed at preventing contractors from doing?
So as you can imagine, Tom, there are lots of different definitions. The one that has been featured in this new regulation really focuses on labor practices that involve some type of force, fraud, or coercion. So this new rule really expands the definition of covered conduct that contractors have to focus on.
And it sounds like, given the depth into the supply chain, and we'll get into that, that the rule goes, that this doesn't just apply to foreign contractors, because presumably no U.S. company would be reasonably expected to be engaged in human trafficking.
No, that's exactly right. One of the things that we've been hearing from government contractors in the U.S. is that this poses a big challenge because, as you mentioned, Tom, this covers really the length of the supply chain. So U.S. companies that have a presence overseas or have contractors overseas really are going to have to be paying very close attention to this rule.
All right. So there seems to be a compliance piece of this and a certification part of it. So let's talk about the compliance part first. Starting Monday, what do contractors need to do to comply?
So I think starting on Monday, contractors are going to see the clause begin to roll out in solicitations and in contracts. I think as a practical matter, it's not going to be a cliff effect. It doesn't, you know, you don't flip a switch and on Monday everyone's going to have to comply. I think as we see generally, as in the past, it'll take a number of weeks for that clause to be rolled out. But once contractors start seeing it, as you mentioned, Tom, there really will be a significant compliance program requirement for contractors operating overseas. The most significant is that contractors will have an obligation to put in place a program to monitor, detect, defer, and deter any type of human trafficking overseas. And as you can imagine, for companies with a long supply chain operating overseas in a geographically dispersed area, that can be a real challenge.
And so what types of contracts would these rules apply?
So we're going to see this in any kind of contract. The most significant obligations will apply to those companies that have operations overseas for other than commercial off-the-shelf products. So if you're buying widgets from overseas, it'll be a less significant change. But if you have services or subcontracts for other than commercial off-the-shelf items, then you will be expected to have a compliance program in place to cover these new requirements.
That seems to be a little disingenuous, and because items that are manufactured overseas, especially large volume, low cost types of items like electromechanical switches and that kind of thing, are often produced in pretty questionable labor circumstances. So what do you think Congress was thinking rule writers were thinking when they implemented this law through regulation?
So I think as we've seen in other places, the federal government is the largest purchaser of goods and services on the face of the planet. Has said that there is a special obligation to eradicate certain kinds of conduct or encourage certain kinds of behavior. So I think when you go back to the legislative history here from Congress and also the White House, there is a very conscious attempt to be provocative in this area, to say that if we're going to use taxpayer funds, there are certain things that as a purchaser, we find unacceptable. So I think when you look at the rule and the requirements, there is a very knowing attempt to try to look at the whole supply chain and put an obligation on government contractors to say, now you have an obligation too to look at the length of your supply chain and do what you can to eradicate certain kinds of behavior.
And there are also requirements for whistleblowing protections for people that might be aware of this kind of thing going on. even a housing plan, and I'm reading your law firm's blog on this, a housing plan that ensures contractor-provided housing meets local housing and safety standards. So this goes very far and wide.
It does. It gets into some very granular details, as you mentioned, both in terms of recruiting and housing and travel. It does get down into the weeds, and each contractor will have to deal with that given their own unique circumstances. And I think that the companies that have the most activities in these areas, particularly in regions, industries, sectors that have a history of human trafficking, will be held to a higher standard than those that operate in less risky locations. So the government has lots of resources to help companies identify those high-risk areas. And because the rule talks about this risk-based analysis, as a practical matter, companies that are in these high-risk areas will be held to a much higher standard.
We're speaking with Peter Ayer, a partner at the Government Contracts Group at the law firm Crowell & Mooring. So it sounds like the wisest course for companies to take is a risk management approach, where, you know, if all of your sourcing in a particular line is done in Canada or France or Great Britain, probably you don't need as much attention to human trafficking issues there as you might to supply contracts, for example, originating with, say, a supplier in Afghanistan.
One of the features of this rule, you're exactly right, Tom. One of the features is that it does contemplate that contractors will have to engage in this risk-based analysis. One of the challenges and one of the big questions is, what are the mitigation measures that are appropriate? So industry, some in industry talked about trying to carve out a safe harbor if companies put certain measures in place. The final rule didn't feature that safe harbor. So one of the questions is going to be, what is good enough? So once you've exceeded the minimum threshold requirements, what are the expectations? What are the specific things that the government is going to expect contractors to do, and who's going to pay for those things? There are a lot of questions that still remain to be answered as this rule is rolled out.
So it sounds like contractors in the federal arena could be subject to the same kind of gotcha that the clothing manufacturers, Nike and so forth, have been subjected to as activists discover defects in the labor practices in their supply chains.
So there are a lot of risks in this area, as you point out, Tom. One certainly is a reputational risk, an industry risk. But because of the way the rule is crafted, there are a number of other remedies that are featured in that rule, too. So bottom line is, this is something contractors are really going to have to pay close attention to. And because of the nature of the changes, it's not something that come March 2nd, they'll just be able to suddenly come into compliance. It takes a long time, particularly for large companies, to do that kind of risk assessment, design and deploy the compliance program that will make them in a position that they can comply with this rule going forward.
And there are quite a number of things that contractors and subcontractors are prohibited from doing besides human trafficking itself. And that sounds like a pretty, detailed regime that's imposed on them, such as destroying, concealing, confiscating, or otherwise denying access by an employee to his or her identifying and immigration documents. And so there's a lot of strictures related to that kind of conduct that looks like contractors have to implement also, or make sure people understand what they can't do.
That's right, Tom. And in fact, the rule has been written in such a way that it defines human trafficking in a very broad way. So the types of activities that you talked about are actually defined in the rule as examples of human trafficking. So this is quite a change from the 2009 iteration of this regulation, which is what has remained in place until this final rule was issued in late January. So there are certain types of activities that are actually now defined and called human trafficking, relating to documentation, certain labor practices, things of that sort. So this really will be a difference, both in terms of what is defined as human trafficking and then what the requirements are to make sure that doesn't occur and benefit from government contracts and taxpayer funds.
Now, more and more large companies have something called a chief compliance officer or even a vice president of compliance. You're seeing this title, which I don't remember seeing 20, 25 years ago. It sounds like this is something that almost every company doing business with the government is going to have someone that they can point to and say, "This, your job is compliance with this and every other regulation."
Well, I was going to say that this is one of many regulations that we have seen coming out of the government recently. And when you talk to chief compliance officers or similarly titled individuals within government contractors, that they'll tell you, as I'm sure you know, that you know there are just more and more things that they need to have on their radar screen in order to comply and be a responsible government contractor. So this is, I think, the latest in that series. But you're exactly right that this is this really does have a lot of moving parts. There's a compliance piece. There's a procurement piece. There's an internal investigations piece. So really, there are a lot of things that will need to be coordinated. And ultimately, whether it's one person or a team of people, government contractors will need to have a documented process for showing that they have looked at, considered, done the risk assessment, and now comply with this rule.
And this rule is final as of Monday.
That is correct.
Peter Ayer is a partner at the Government Contracts Group at the law firm Crowell & Mooring. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.